Hello, America. I'm Mark Levin, and this is Life, Liberty, and Levin. You've been receiving a lot of disinformation and misinformation about how litigation works, about fraud, about the Constitution. What you've basically been hearing is people sitting in their chairs in Washington, D.C. studios or Manhattan studios telling you there's no evidence of fraud, or where's the evidence, or there's not enough evidence to change the election results. You're also hearing them dismiss or poo-poo serious constitutional arguments about the Equal Protection Clause, or even Article 2 of the Constitution, which gives the authority solely to the state legislature to make election laws, not judges, not secretary of states, and consent decrees. No, nobody but the state legislature. I'm going to try and sort this out for you a little bit here. First of all, when people come on television and they say, where's the evidence? I want to see the evidence. I want to see all the evidence. Do you have enough evidence? Not just this, that, or the other. Let me explain how civil litigation works. This isn't criminal litigation. The Trump campaign doesn't have a grand jury. They don't have FBI investigators. They don't have subpoena power. They're bringing civil suits. Now, let me explain this. To file a civil complaint, you need a reasonable basis in fact and law. Allegations can be made on information and belief. Now, a motion to dismiss tests the legal sufficiency of the complaint. Assuming everything in the complaint is true, does it state a claim upon which relief can be granted? So for a motion to be dismissed, everything is assumed to be true and all reasonable inferences are granted to the plaintiff. And if the judge still doesn't think that there can possibly be a case, even down the road after discovery, he or she will dismiss the case. One of the things that troubles me greatly is a number of the cases that the Trump campaign have brought have been dismissed, and in my view, should not have been dismissed. And what the media do is, rather than explain the nature of the case and what it is that the Trump campaign is alleging, they just say, oh, they lost another case, was dismissed. Why? Now, let's talk about discovery, expedited discovery. So you bring a case. You have to pass the motion to dismiss standard, which typically is fairly easy. You don't need all this evidence for a court to accept the case, as I explained. And then you can seek expedited discovery to gather all the evidence that you think is out there. An expedited discovery can be granted by a court, and it often is, when injunctive relief is sought by temporary restraining order and or preliminary injunction. Depending upon the need for prompt resolution, and we have one now given the clock, that discovery can be ordered immediately. The judge can do it right at the desk, order it, and courts have the power to speed discovery along and very fast. Now, let's talk about, as an example, this Dominion voting system. Unexplained significant deviations from expected results. For instance, mathematical inconsistencies supported by experts. In other words, expert testimony given in affidavits should be more than sufficient to establish a reasonable basis to file a complaint and justify expedited, fast discovery. So it's all wrong when you hear legal analysts and hosts say, where's all the evidence? Where's all the evidence? This is a civil suit. So you have the bar you need to pass, so your case isn't dismissed. Then you conduct discovery. Written discovery, document demands, depositions, and so forth on an expedited level. That's how it's supposed to work. So it is frustrating to me to listen and watch people who have no experience in civil litigation, know nothing about civil litigation, or former federal prosecutors and professors who should know better, saying the same thing, or political operatives with whiteboards and without whiteboards. I'm afraid there's no evidence. We don't have the evidence. There's no evidence. So if judges prevent the Trump campaign from going forward, for example, involving the Dominion voting system, they're never going to gather the quote-unquote evidence that's necessary in a trial, in a court proceeding, or where you're seeking some kind of remedy or relief. Because you don't go to court with boxes and boxes full of evidence. Sometimes you can, but you're not required to. And so all this talk from Republican senators who have no idea what they're talking about, Mitt Romney, Ben Sasse, who was just elected, so he's not all worked up about anything, Adam Kinzinger, it's over already and so forth. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But why won't they embrace our legal system? Why won't they embrace our constitutional system? Why won't they encourage the courts to go ahead efficiently to act on these cases so we can get to the bottom of it? And there's reasons to be concerned, ladies and gentlemen. There's different kinds of cases the Trump campaign is bringing. Number one, of the sort I just said, they want to test this machine system, either now or in the very near future, with a filing. But they're getting their experts lined up and they're getting their affidavits lined up. How do I know? Because unlike most, I've asked them. Number two, you have cases of actual fraud. The Trump campaign in various cities and states have collected hundreds and hundreds of signed affidavits under penalty of perjury from election workers, from state officials, from civilians, hundreds and hundreds. That's hundreds and hundreds more than they ever had in the Russia collusion hoax. So these are serious cases that they're bringing. I can't help it if judges are getting nervous and they don't want to pursue it, or they're Obama appointees or whatever they are, or left-wing rogue justices, as you have the majority on the Supreme Court in Pennsylvania, just like you had in Florida in 2000 on the Supreme Court of Florida. And what other kinds of cases? Constitutional cases are being brought, very serious cases, under Article 2, Section 1, Clause 2, where the United States Supreme Court, Associate Justice Sam Alito, has already reached down into Pennsylvania twice and ordered them to protect certain ballots in case the court rules that what the Pennsylvania Supreme Court did may be unconstitutional. What am I talking about? Article 2, Section 1, Clause 2 of the United States Constitution. Each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislature. They specifically say the legislature. You won't find that in many places in the Constitution where they're specific about that. The legislature thereof may direct a number of electors equal to the whole number of senators and representatives to which the state may be entitled in the Congress. In other words, the state legislature makes election laws. And I can tell you from my own research way, way back, there's no way the framers of the Constitution or the ratification conventions would have approved this Constitution if the legislatures themselves weren't in charge of the voting systems, weren't setting the laws. You need to understand there was no federal government. They created this federal government, and the states had to buy into it. In one of the areas where the states said, we'll only buy into it if you protect our authority and underscore our authority to determine what the election laws are. So when you have the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, or you have a consent decree in Georgia, or you have a federal judge in Michigan, or things of that sort going on, interfering with decisions by the state legislatures, that is unconstitutional, and that should be raised. And how many ballots does that affect? Nobody knows. It could be hundreds and hundreds of thousands. Now, as was pointed out by ABC News some time ago, let's talk about these legal changes that have come. You want to know why there's litigation going on? You want to know why this is taking so long? Because the Democrats and their surrogates in the Biden campaign brought over 200 to 300 lawsuits in the lead up to the election to change the voting systems in each state. And the Trump campaign is trying to address them now, confront them, and deal with them, because all of these cases that involve the Democrats were intended to make fraud easier, if not institutionalize it. And they write in ABC News, thanks to legal challenges from voting rights advocates, meaning left-wing Democrats and their party, some states that typically require ballots to be received by polls closing time will now accept ballots postmarked by Election Day for the 2020 election. The Pennsylvania Supreme Court said, we don't even care if there's a postmark. We don't care if there's a signature. We don't care if the signatures don't match. That was a case brought really by the Democrat governor who couldn't get these things from the Republican legislature. So they went in the court and got it from the Democrats on the Supreme Court. In the three blue wall states the president won in 2016, they wrote, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, judges have recently issued rulings that extend the deadline for mail ballots to be received. Judges. The text of the Constitution says that's unconstitutional. Judges don't get to make that decision, whether they're state judges or federal judges. That's in Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin. In Michigan, a court of claims judge, the lowest judge there is in the state, ordered clerks to accept ballots that are postmarked by November 2 and received within 14 days of the election, the deadline for results to be certified. These ballots have to be counted as provisional ballots. Legislature didn't pass that. The Republicans didn't agree to that. In Wisconsin, a U.S. federal district judge ruled that ballots postmarked by November 3rd can be counted as long as they're received by November 9th. The legislature didn't do that in Wisconsin. And in Pennsylvania, these are all Republican legislatures that are being overruled by courts, by these voting advocates, Democrats who are bringing these cases. And in Pennsylvania, not only will mailed ballots that are postmarked on or before 8 p.m. on election day and received by 5 p.m. the Friday after it be counted, due to a ruling from the state Supreme Court, any ballots that arrive within that time frame without a postmark or with an unreadable postmark will be presumed to have been sent before the cutoff point unless evidence indicates otherwise. That is a violation of the federal Constitution. State law did not provide for that. In Minnesota, ballots postmarked by election day and received within a week after the election will be counted. Both Massachusetts and Kentucky are allowing postmarked ballots received by November 6th to be counted. In New Jersey, it goes on and on and on. These changes have been taking place. Notice this. I don't know of a single newsroom that has put a chart on the monitor to show you all the changes that occurred in the last year or so, even in the last 90 days, in these states by court order or by decisions of secretaries of states or boards of elections to get around Republican legislatures. This is a highly abusive and controversial election across the country. In Georgia, a federal judge ruled that ballots postmarked by election day will count if election officials get them by the third day after the election. But the Secretary of State, the Republican National Committee, Georgia Republican Party are challenging this order. But you have courts that are just stepping in and changing the election laws. And this is really quite shocking. Trump campaign lost its lawsuit in Nevada, seeking to stop the state from mailing out ballots, among other pursuits. Nevada changed its mail-in procedures, that they're mailing it to the election rolls, 60 days before the election. 60 days. Then they put in ballot harvesting. They did a very controversial way of checking signatures that, of course, excluded any Republican observer. And you can go on into New Jersey and these other states. So these are very serious matters. So when you have politicians who are just out there saying, like Romney has no idea what I'm talking about. He hasn't looked at a single thing. Neither has Sass, Mr. Constitution. He's not Mr. Constitution. Now, what should happen in these states? What should have happened and what should happen is that these Republican state legislatures in Pennsylvania, in Michigan, and these other states, Georgia and so forth, they should have issued a resolution early on stating that we, under the federal Constitution, have an oath and have a duty to ensure that Article 2 is upheld, that we make the election laws, not anybody else, period. And that the election laws that were in place, but changed by federal and state courts or by fiat, by a secretary of state or an election board, are null and void. And all counts should be based on the election laws that we put in place that were unconstitutionally altered. Any votes beyond that are illegal and unconstitutional. And if you're going to cry about disenfranchisement, blame the Democrats, the courts, and the people who did that. That's how you have a constitutional vote. That's why that matters. And I also fought the United States chief on the United States Supreme Court, John Roberts, the Chief Justice. He could have killed this right away, several weeks ago, when he should have voted with the others, the other originalists, and so should have Kavanaugh, instead of letting Pennsylvania get away with what it did. What they should have ruled is, for Pennsylvania and for every other state, the Constitution is the Constitution. Article 2 leaves it to the legislature. Any changes done by any court, local, state, or federal, done by any public official, governor, secretary of state, or members of any boards of elections, are per se unconstitutional, and all counts will be based on the federal Constitution, what the state legislatures have passed. If they had done this, almost none of this would be going on. Almost none of this. So those people that say, Biden won, let's get over it, let's move along. If you believe in the rule of law, if you believe in the Constitution, If you believe in the nature of civil litigation, that there needs to be some discovery with the Dominion voting system and other activities that took place, where we literally have hundreds and hundreds of affidavits of fraud, if you believe in that system, then it shouldn't be cut short. Otherwise, the entire integrity of your franchise is called into question, and it'll happen in 2022 and 2024. This isn't the Republicans won't let Biden be seated. This is the Democrats have created chaos and anarchy. Judges have created chaos and anarchy. And if we don't fix it now, we'll never fix it. And Joe Biden better understand that there cannot be unity and there will only be resistance. If he doesn't join in the call to uphold the Constitution and the rule of law and to let these civil procedures progress, notice he hasn't said it once. Not once. I'll be right back. Who should know better, saying the same thing, or political. Welcome back. We have a great guest who most of you are familiar with, Victor Davis Hanson, but I can never hear enough from Victor Davis Hanson. His knowledge of history and philosophy as applied to what's taking place today is essential. Victor Davis Hanson, you heard what I had to say. You see, there's a huge rush by the Democrats, by the establishment Republicans, and by the media, and a lot of ignorance. Let's get this over with, and let's go ahead and coronate Joe Biden. How do you look at this?
Well, I look at the way you did, and for me, it was, and I'm not a legal scholar like you are, but I'm a historian and observer of contemporary events. For me, it was always a constitutional issue, and that is the Constitution suggests, or doesn't suggest, it delineates the legislatures as sole arbiters of election law, unless the Congress shall intervene, and they haven't in this case. So there were the laws, they were clearly massaged, in some cases violated, and they had a difference because we're in a close election, the margins are very thin, and those violations may or may not, and I think that the inconsistencies that you pointed out show that there's real doubt about the election. And so that's the issue. And the left tries to say, well, we're 2 weeks and a half from the election, we're 3 weeks from the electors, whatever happened, it's happened. And there are some on our side that had a press conference, and I understand why they're concerned, but they said 70%, some of them have said Trump won, or millions of votes. And so our critics focus on that argument and not what you said, because that argument then suggests this is the greatest scandal in the history of the United States at a magnitude we've never seen. It may well be, but that's not your point. Your point is that let's find out if it is or not. You didn't say, I have proof of 70% landslide, or it's a big landslide. And that's why I wish people would concentrate on the points you made. What you're saying is, here's the Constitution, here's how even the people who violated it know that they violated it, and those violations have to be adjudicated because in a close elections, they may well have altered the result. And we have evidence that they might have altered the results because we have these affidavits, these inconsistencies, these unproven computers, and this rush to have mail and early voting because of the COVID lockdown. And so you're saying, take a deep breath, follow the Constitution. And I wish everybody on our side would stick to your argument, because what's happening, the critics are coming in and saying, you guys claim that it was a landslide. Where's the evidence it was a landslide? Well, we didn't say it. Maybe some people in their exuberance said that, but we were sticking to the Constitution and the violations and the ramifications. So that's, I think you're spot on. And I wish that people would codify their arguments in consistency, what you said, because it's a very persuasive argument.
Now, in addition, what's troubling to me is the strategy of the Democrats. These were Democrats who brought these lawsuits basically to soften up the playing field, almost like a military operation. They brought in all the artillery, hammered, one court after another, one Secretary of State after another. It was obviously very well coordinated and networked by Mark Elias, one of their lawyers, Bob Bauer, one of their lawyers, who also have been involved in past activities with respect to changing votes and persuading courts and secretaries of state to change votes. And it's obvious, they looked at 2016, Victor Davis Hanson, they said, that can't happen again. And they said, we have to change the rules. And they changed the rules, maybe in a score or more of states, particularly the critical states. And they had a plan set out to do exactly this. And in none of these cases were the changes intended to assist the Republicans. And none of these changes were intended to promote good government. None of these changes were intended to ensure the security of the vote. Quite the opposite. So I can understand, and I think you can understand, why people are really troubled by this, even apart from the constitutional arguments that I make and the litigation processes that I talk about. It's like, wait a minute. What are they doing? Well, in 2016, we knew the answer to who would be president at 2 a.m. in the morning. Now look at what's going on, right?
Yeah, and it's worse than that because it's 2016, 2020, but we're looking at 2021, and Georgia's the last redoubt, Mark, because the left has said that they're not interested in changing the policies as much as the mechanisms by which they make policy. And we had a heroic effort in the House, and we had a heroic effort to keep the Senate, and Donald Trump did a heroic effort. But the fact of the matter is, there's a good chance that our collective fates will hinge on those two seats. And if we lose those two seats, they're not talking about just nationalizing healthcare. They're talking about getting rid of a 232-year electoral college with its national voter compact. They're talking about changing 151 years of tradition with the Supreme Court. And they can do that if they get rid of the Senate filibuster. And then we're talking about the end of a 60-year tradition of 50 states. So once you have a 15-person Supreme Court, and we're within a hair's breadth of getting that, because we know what's going to happen. You can have almost anything. If you have the House and the presidency and the representatives and the Supreme Court, and the danger is that this could be a replay of what we just saw on November 3rd. We know what's going to happen. The polls are going to be massaging a incredible new blue state, Georgia. We're going to be told that. We're going to be told that Warnock and Ossoff are moderates, that they're no different than Bill Clinton's third way. None of this radical stuff is ever going to make it. The media is going to blanket it out. Big tech is going to deplatform, blue check, whatever they have to do. And the money that we saw in particular states is going to be nothing compared to the $1 billion that will come in from Mike Bloomberg and others. We've already seen people as diverse as Andrew Yang and columnists for the New York Times like Tom Friedman say, violate the law and move into Georgia and then stay there temporarily registered and then get out, basically. That was their implication, which is a felony. So what I'm getting at is that everything hangs in the balance now. There's no margin for error. And if we think that Georgia is a traditional red state anymore, it's had enormous changes in demography through illegal and legal immigration and its tech center, the suburban metropolis of Atlanta. That's 6 million of the 12 million people. And if we lose those two seats, I don't think, you and I have never seen anything like the consequences in our lifetime. We're talking about structural changes to the Constitution as we know it and to the traditions and protocols of governance for over a century and a half.
We'll be right back. Welcome back. Victor Davis Hanson. The Democrat Party seems to stand opposite of so many things that we stand for, our principles, our traditions. Whether you look at our economic system, in so many ways they reject capitalism. When you look at our immigration system, in so many ways they reject the old immigration system where people have to show loyalty to our culture and to our country. They, as you pointed out earlier, they reject even the institutions that are set up by the Constitution. They seek to effectively burn down the Supreme Court and the United States Senate. You can go one issue after another. How did they get here? And where do they want to take us, for crying out loud?
Well, I think part of it, Mark, is there was always an ancient idea from Aristotle of Tocqueville that the left likes an equality of result mandated by the government rather than a quality of opportunity. We knew that. But what enhanced that idea was in the 21st century, we had a perfect storm of globalization brought in enormous amounts of wealth from 7 billion people in the world, and it concentrated on the two coasts. That's where the universities are, that's where Silicon Valley is, that's where Wall Street banking, and we created this new elite, this international elite. Then at the same time, we all agree with nothing's better than legal immigration. It enriches us. But we have 50 million people who were not born in the United States, and it taxes the ability of the melting pot, especially when some of them are here illegally, to assimilate them. And then finally, our means of communication now are dominated by about 20 square miles in Silicon Valley, whether it's social media, Twitter, Facebook, the order of a Google search. And you put all that together, and it enhances this ancient idea that we're going to mandate equality. They don't have popular support. That's why they don't run as progressives or hard leftists. Joe Biden didn't run as one. They try to hide that. These candidates in Georgia won't do that. But they have the result, Mark, is think about it. They have social media, entertainment, Hollywood, professional sports, the media, academia, K through 12, the bureaucracy, the administrative state. And so all we have is talk radio and the people and a few other avenues on the internet. So it's an asymmetrical challenge now. And I've never seen such power concentrated in such few venues, all in pursuit of an idea that we're going to be equal one way or the other on the back end, and by people who have no intention of being equal themselves. None of their ideas are going to apply to them. They're never going to be subject to the ramifications of their own egalitarian philosophy. They're the anointed, and they want exceptions for themselves, as we saw with Gavin Newsom and Nancy Pelosi violating their own standards of quarantine.
It's so frustrating to you as a historian, to me, as I study this history myself, is this is so predictable. And the autocrats always talk about the people. The autocrats always talk as if they're populists. And whatever decisions they make, and no matter how big their iron fist or their police state, you can look at the communist China, communist Cuba, you can look at Iran, you can look at wherever, Russia, look wherever you want. They always destroy the people in the name of the people. And what's happening now is we're destroying the Constitution in the name of the Constitution. So we have a lot of work ahead of us. That's why, and I don't know if you agree with me, that's why I say, no, don't give up on the litigation on this election. We have got to take them on. We have got to confront them wherever we can, wherever they are. And then we have to learn how to go on offense for our liberty and our Constitution. Otherwise, we're going to be devoured like everything else. Are we not?
No, we are. And the reason they don't like the Constitution, because it frames why we need a republic and not a radical Athenian democracy. And that's why we have two senators from each state, Mark. That's why we have the Electoral College. They believe that there were certain types of rural living and agriculture, agrarianism, that offered a check on these urban high-density states, so that Wyoming, a rancher in Wyoming had something to say about 8 million people, how they lived in New York, even though it wasn't radically equal. And that whole system is under attack now because people don't want a republic anymore. They want a radical democracy where 51% of the people on any given day decide what's good for everybody without constitutional guidelines. And that's what I'm scared about, that they've rejected the whole idea of a constitutional republic, from the nature of the Senate to the number of senators, the Electoral College, to all of that.
Yeah, the mob. So we really don't need a Bill of Rights, I guess, because the Bill of Rights protects us from government and really from the mob. We'll be right back. Victor Davis Hanson, it is my position, as somebody worked in the Reagan administration, again, I've studied history rather extensively, you are a scholar in it, that Donald Trump should be considered, and certainly will be considered, among the great presidents. I don't mean the left-wing historians on university and college campuses, or those that, you know, are guests on MSNBC and writing speeches for Joe Biden. I'm talking about when there's really a sober look at what this man did and has done and hopefully will continue to do. But what he did in a four-year period, whether it's the vaccine and these other things, under enormous attack, I mean, people wanting to go to prison, that he's going to be viewed as an exceptional president. Do you agree with me?
I do, and I'm trying to be empirical here, despite the fact that I voted for him twice. China, the whole relationship with China is recalibrated. Left is now joining in with the right and saying, you know what? This can't go on. They're not going to be hegemonic. They're not destined to rule the world just because they have 1.4 billion people. We are not going to let that happen. Whether the left says it's the Uyghurs now or Hong Kong, or the right says that this is a corruption of the world mercantile system. Donald Trump did that. He took the Middle East and he completely redefined it. Whatever one's political party is saying, it's a more secure, more pro-American, more pro-Western, and more stable society. Iran is losing, losing, losing now. And they were ascendant until Donald Trump came in. We are the largest gas and oil producer in the world, and that's given us enormous freedom in the Middle East. It's nullified the power of Russia. It's terrified China. It's given a boost to interior America. And then, most importantly, Mark, he redefined the Republican Party. He said, we're not going to be caricatured as the aristocratic golfing class, which the left used to do. We are a worker middle class party, upper middle class, lower middle class. And the interior of the United States is not done for. It's not deindustrialized. It's not a rust belt. We've got cheap energy. We've got good workers. We've got good infrastructure. We have less transportation costs. We can make America great again. That was a wonderful thing to do. And finally, he said, you know what? Legal immigration, great, but you can't have a state without borders. You can't have a nation without security. And everybody said that that's impossible. And he built a wall and he got Mexico to cooperate with us. Mexico was actually guarding portions of the border. And the result is that he restored the idea, at least for now, that the melting pot is something that we should cherish. We want to integrate, we want to assimilate, we want to intermarry. Our racial identity is incidental, it's not essential to who we are. And you got record numbers, I mean, not a lot of numbers, but record numbers of African Americans to vote for a Republican. So across the board, if you just tune out what the left says or the never Trump right, and just look at the record, it's astounding. In 4 years. And Mark, I'm not even going to comment on the judges, but you know that better than I do. His appointments have been stellar, they've been numerous, and they're going to have a lasting legacy.
And you know, Victor, even look at this virus. The attacks on him have been grotesque, despite what some of these governors did to harm their own populations, and the president had no control over that. It was obvious to him early on, masks are fine, social distancing is fine, shutdowns are not fine, causing other kinds of maladies to people are not fine. We need to address this. We need to fix this. And so here comes this businessman and he says, all right, I want therapeutics and I want vaccines. I'm going to cut the red tape. I'm going to swing the whip. We're going to do this as fast as we can without cutting out all safety and health features. We want those included. We're going to get this done by the end of the year. He says he's going to do it. He's mocked. He's attacked. There's experts that say it's impossible. He's undermined by bureaucrats within his own administration. Fauci said it couldn't happen until January 2021, and that's aggressive. 10 months in, we're going to have two vaccines. They're already under production. The needles are already under production. The transportations and distribution's already been figured out. I don't think we've ever seen anything like this in American history. Take 30 seconds and explain.
Well, very quickly, just look at the record. It takes 4 or 5 years for a vaccination. We've never had the rapidity that we're going to get these vaccinations in. We're told that we're suffering singularly, unlike Europe. Look at the deaths per million compared to the UK or Italy or Spain or Belgium. We're either better or, I don't want to use that word in this context, but we're doing as well or better than Europe. And then when you look at the criticism of them from Joe Biden and look at it in detail, it turns out that Joe Biden's COVID strategy is pretty much copied from Donald Trump's. And he adds some little flourishes that we're going to wear a mask all the time, despite, as you point out, Dr. Fauci has been all over on the use of masks and all over on quarantines, and as is the WHO. So I just look at what his critics say they would have done, and then I examine it very carefully. I can't see much difference other than they're emulating the Trump policy.
In the end, Donald Trump did something everybody said he couldn't do, and as a result, he's going to save, in my view, with the vaccine, millions and millions of lives, and get Americans back to a normal routine. We'll be right back.